Isn't this a sports show?
My whole breathing situation is not ideal right now, but I'm a warrior.
Almost entirely.
I will prevail slash overcome, but I also will complain about it. That's kind of my MO.
This is Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe.
Who would you have casted to play you on the Almost Entirely Sports live stream?
Josh Hutcherson from
that's,
Hunger Games.
That's pretty solid.
On 1510 AM, 94.5 FM, and the ESPN Kansas City Facebook page.
What about you? Do you have one?
James Earl Jones.
Keep up with the show on Twitter at JB Briscoe.
There's a lot of stupid things I'd do for good retweets.
On ESPN Kansas City.
Poll question. Will Chiefs coach Andy Reid be on the hot seat at the end of next season? June. Watch out for that poll! That was to the tune of George of the Jungle, by the way. Could you tell? Did you notice?
No, I didn't notice.
Did you actually not?
No, I noticed.
Okay, I didn't know.
George of the Jungle is great. It's an American classic.
It is. I didn't know if that was going to be something I needed to explain to people. Oh, my Lord. The question's apparently about if he'll... Well, no, actually, this says we'll be on the hot seat at the end of 2018. I was going to give them the benefit of the doubt and say they meant at the end of next season. If they, like, don't win anything... I really like when people do this. I'm going to go, hey, Beards, you can mark this down. Andy Reid and these Chiefs could go 0-16 this year, and he would not be fired this offseason. What are you talking about? Will Andy Reid be on the hot seat after next season? Yes, if the Chiefs don't make the playoffs. Yes, if the Chiefs get knocked out in the first round of the playoffs again. Yes, if the Chiefs don't win the Super Bowl. No, his job is saved no matter what happens. Click and 88 votes, which is 74% on this website. It says job is safe no matter what happens. Three people apparently legitimately believe that if the Chiefs don't win a Super Bowl this year, then Andy Reid should be on the hot seat. And those three people are the three people that I genuinely do not care if they listen to the show or not. I really do want to appeal to as many people as possible. But I'll take 74% of Chiefs fans if I could get that. That would be a nice career move, a nice state of my existence. 74% of Chiefs fans is plenty. They just changed quarterbacks, and like I am all about this year of Patrick Mahomes, and I think it's going to be good, if not great. I think it will be good. It'll be fun. But partially because it's going to be, like, long-term for the future. Like building that base level. What are we talking about? Really, I mean, Andy Reid would have to commit a crime. He would have to be caught selling meth out of his basement. And even then, I think Clark Hunt might stand up for him.
What if he has three different burner accounts that are tweeting about former players and current players?
This is a great hypothetical.
Just completely pulled out of thin air.
Legitimately, though, that's actually a good way to ask this question.
What would it take to get Andy Reid on the hot seat?
But finding a specific things that have happened. Because I'm dead serious, I don't think that would do it. If he had Brian Colangelo's burner accounts, allegedly.
Or allegedly Brian Colangelo's wife's burner accounts, we swear.
Either, regardless, if that situation happened to Andy Reid, I don't think that would do it. And I'm trying to come up with anything less than criminal that I would have, like, qualify. I don't think I can do it. The other thing that make it even harder is that there's not someone in the system right now who's the likely candidate to take over. Because Eric Bieniemy is going from running back coach to offensive coordinator, which is just a little bit different than how I viewed Doug Peterson and Matt Nagy. So if either of those guys were still around, then it would free you up a little, probably. I don't think that burner accounts will get Andy Reid fired at the end of this year. 0-16 and burner accounts. It would have to be 0-16 and burner accounts that said that Clark Hunt made him trade Marcus Peters and Alex Smith. Like, maybe if they go 0-16 and at some point Reid says that or tweets that from a burner account, that Clark Hunt did force him to trade Marcus Peters and also forced him to trade Alex Smith, and that he doesn't like Mahomes and wanted to keep Marcus Peters, then you've achieved critical mass, and that would probably do it. Probably.
Maybe.
That would 70% chance do it. Did you see the big news of the day, Beards?
That Bill Russell flipped off Charles Barkley at the award show last night?
No, did you see the bread-related...
There's bigger news?
Well, there are two things, actually.
That Magic Johnson said he'll step down as GM of the Lakers if he doesn't sign free agents in the next offseason. There's bigger news than that?
Well, the Bill Russell thing is really close because Diego Maradona did do a double bird after Argentina went up 2-1 today.
Oh, but that's soccer. That's not a real sport.
Don't do this. You don't want this fight. No, the big news. The really big news. You saw it, right?
Maybe.
And I don't mean the Royals continually considering signing a convicted child molester. Oh, that story is way more complicated than the phrase I just used. But that's not what I'm talking about either. I'm also not talking about there being a dead body in... I want to make sure I get the name right. I was going to just say what I thought it was. Now I got it.
Janoris Jenkins.
Okay, that's what I was going to say. I felt pretty good about it. But I didn't want to accidentally put a corpse in Eli Apple's basement.
Ooh.
Yeah, there's a body was found in Janoris Jenkins' basement. Not that story. Colin Cowherd is signing a 4-year deal to return to FS1.
I did see this.
But he's not going to continue to co-host Speak for Yourself.
Oh my gosh, what am I going to watch from 4 to 6 weekdays?
This was my new question for you, is how are you going to get through this show ever again if you can't just sit there with your eyes latched on to Jason Whitlock and Colin Cowherd having very smart conversations?
Is that what's usually on it this time? On
I actually thought it was earlier than this usually, but I really don't know. It's never on FS1 in this building, except for World Cup. And then whenever the World Cup ends, then this comes on afterwards. So I legitimately do not know. And I will, like, my TVs right now are Judge Judy and Speak for Yourself.
Oh, I've got MLB TV. Where's Judge Judy at?
I'm choosing.
Speak for Yourself.
No, stick with MLB TV. And I'll say that very rarely.
Oh, no.
I would trade Speak for Yourself for MLB TV any day. I might change it for a blank screen. We'll see in a second. I think I might just go double barrel Judge Judy.
That's the way to go.
I think it is, right?
Yeah. Twice the justice.
Yeah, I'm doing that. Speaking of, we keep forgetting to put all of our mascots back out.
Ah!
They're in here. We can't do it mid-segment. We'll do it whenever we're waiting for Seth Kaiser. By the way, Seth Kaiser joining us in 10 minutes here today. We'll take a break in 5, call Seth and a couple more after that, and talk to him from about, 4:20 to 4:45 or so, because we are off at 5 today, getting bumped around. So Seth is on in about 10 minutes here today. And we'll talk to him about two things that he wrote this week. He wrote in Anatomy of the Play about forward progress, which we will discuss, why he made us relive that. And also why Justin Houston became a controversial figure of evaluation in Chiefs circles. We'll talk to Seth about those two things. Are we at T-Bones tomorrow? That's tomorrow, right?
Yes.
Tomorrow is 8:10 day at the T-Bones. Go out there, say hi. We'll be broadcasting live from somewhere beforehand. And I have been told, allegedly, that there may be your fourth favorite radio host in Kansas City might be throwing out the first pitch. If you're there, be there early enough to see if that happens or not. That's all. That's the only way that I'll put it. I'm not willing to overpromise and underdeliver. But if I do, and you are there, you're gonna want to witness. We will all be witnesses. You know what I ought to do tomorrow, Beards? We ought to see if we can get any former Royals on the show so I can ask for some pointers.
About the first pitch?
If I or your other fourth favorite sports talk radio show host in Kansas City are doing it tomorrow, we ought to try to get Bluma. We need to call Bluma tomorrow.
I know firsthand, he can throw the ball.
He can. He threw a ping pong ball through Beards' torso.
Several of them.
Just left a big old gap in him.
I gotta say, I look like Swiss cheese under the shirt.
He does. It's horrifying. I don't know how he missed all your vital organs. I guess he was just that, like, he was that good at pinpointing.
I'm lucky, man.
Either Bluma is extremely accurate or you're extremely lucky. But it took out one of your kidneys, so you can't sell that on the black market anymore, which is depressing. Other than that,
which is a real shame because I was going to do that so that I could, you know, afford things.
Yeah, no, I keep looking up, you know, black market access, how to sell a kidney on the
way
black market.
Way to rub it in, bud.
They're like, oh, I can, but I haven't yet. I understand. Does the kidney that Bluma threw a ping pong ball through, does it have any functionality?
I mean, it's got a giant ping pong sized hole in it.
How big is an average kidney, though?
I asked Bluma if he would sign it so that we could sell it that way.
That would have been good.
And then it would have, you know, the ping pong hole and his signature on it, but he said no.
Ooh, each kidney is about 5 inches long and about 3 inches wide. That's smaller than I thought. So yeah, that your kidney is probably not doing you much good in there. After the ping pong damage. Also, with a kidney being that small, I feel like it gets even easier to just pop it out of there, right? I guess the real issue is I need to have a buyer who will at least pay half ahead of time so I can pay for the extraction, right? I don't want to wake up in a bathtub full of ice.
No, that would be bad.
Whenever we talk to Seth, we'll ask him. We'll ask him if he's ever considered trying to sell a kidney. And if Andy Reid should be on, if there's literally anything that Andy Reid could do to get fired, any non-criminal thing that Andy Reid could do to get fired this year. It's June for us, also. It's June for Seth. So whenever we come back, we will talk to Seth Kizer of The Athletic about if there's anything Andy Reid could do to get fired. If he's ever tried to sell a kidney, Justin Houston, and Forward Progress. All that's coming up next year on Almost Entirely Sports.
Now it's time for very serious football talk with the man who met his wife on a blind date, chaperoned by his parents.
They actually came along on the first date with us. That was a...
No!
I rode in the back seat. I was 22.
The man who needs to take a minute to remember the names of all of his children.
Do all of your kids have the same first letter?
No, actually. Let me think. Do any of them? Tucker, Mason, Cole, Isabel, and Lucas.
The man who can defend you in court, but will probably choose not to.
I'll cop to this on a public setting right now. I am an aggressive cuddler in a consensual sense.
Comma, officer.
Good grief, he's a pastor too? When does this guy sleep?
You will find Seth Kizer everywhere except for in his or your bed, because not only does he not sleep, he's also a faithful husband. So that's important.
It's Seth Kizer of The Athletic on Almost Entirely Sports.
All right, Seth, this is unprecedented, but I am going to start this conversation with a very serious sports question spurned on by social media. Are you ready?
I think so. I'm surprised, but I'm ready.
Is there literally anything within the realm of the law that Andy Reid could do to get fired at the end of this season?
No.
All right, thank you. Next topic. Seth Kizer of The Athletic joining us now. It popped up on Twitter today as the most June thing that I've ever seen. Like, oh, if Andy Reid doesn't this or that, should he be on the hot seat following this season? And I literally cannot fathom anything, because Beards was like, well, what if we found like 16 burner accounts where he was like crushing his own players, and like maybe he called out Clark Hunt for forcing him to trade Marcus Peters and Alex Smith, and like, no, I think he'd still be the head coach. Like, I can't invent anything.
Right. Yeah. Outside, I suppose the burner account thing might do it too. But I mean, genuine, outside of something incredibly bizarre, I think the Chiefs could go 0-16 this year, and he'd be the head coach next year.
I said that in the first segment. I feel so good. I feel so supported.
Right. Outside of him doing something completely, either, like you said, illegal, or like just openly coming to the podium and be like, just so you guys know, I don't even care anymore. I'm not even trying.
Right.
You know, I'm tired of this. You know, you guys made me into a Kool-Aid Man meme, and I'm sick of it. You know, whatever. Then I could see it, but outside of that, no. I mean, you're in the first year starting of his hand-picked franchise quarterback. He's the architect of the offense. That would be very, very, very silly.
Yeah, I also, like, unfathomable. And it would have even made more sense in either of the last two seasons, because, yep. Now this could change for Eric Bieniemy, but the last two seasons, his offensive coordinator went and became a head coach somewhere else. Or actually, sorry, Doug Peterson was 2 years ago? Do I have my... I think I got all my dates. There we go.
Doug Peterson was a couple years ago.
Yeah,
and then obviously Nagy was this last year.
Yeah.
And so then it might have made sense, because you had guys like Peterson clearly learned a lot.
Sure.
He runs a real good offense under Reed. And you know, he's taken a lot of that. I mean, it's Andy Reid's offense in Philly that they're running.
Right.
And he just added his own flavor to it, which is a great idea, because Andy Reid runs a brilliant offense.
Sure.
So... But yeah, that would have made more sense. And again, Bieniemy, he might get there. Who knows? That's what Andy Reid does.
Yep.
He creates head coaches.
Yep.
So maybe that. But no, this would be absurd. And again, it's the Patrick Mahomes thing is the biggest thing. This is the guy you chose to groom the most important Chiefs player of the last. Three decades. I can't think of. Since they maybe traded for Joe Montana, even then, no, because that's only a few years. I can't think of a player that's been more important to the franchise than Patrick Mahomes currently is.
No, and I really don't know, not that, you know, going back to checking the pulse of the team 10, 15, 20, 30 years ago is my forte, but
right.
I don't think there's another name that can really do that. Like, guys became really important. Jamaal Charles became very important for a generation of fans. But he wasn't before he played, you know, more than one game. And really, for Mahomes, it was before he played any games. It was before he was, officially signed to a contract. Because
right.
Joe Montana, like, huge name, obviously huge piece of football history. But that was the back end of Joe Montana's career. Patrick Mahomes is the guy immediately.
Right, and he's the guy that you anticipate. Sure, you've got the 5-year rookie contract, but you also hope he's the guy that you're going to keep around forever. And I mean, if he's a good quarterback, good quarterbacks change teams like almost never.
Right.
That's why it was like such a big deal with Kirk Cousins,
mm-hmm.
because he's a good quarterback, and he's not even a great quarterback. If Mahomes ends up being a great quarterback, he ain't going anywhere, because the team won't let it happen.
No, for sure.
You know, not as long as the franchise tag exists.
The exclusive one. I am really interested, and we've talked about this a little bit off and on. I don't know if we've ever actually had like a big conversation post, I think maybe post Kirk Cousins. I think Kirk Cousins might have been the guy that had us disagreeing on Twitter. And maybe it was somebody else. It doesn't really matter. But I am perpetually fascinated with the quarterback market, and because of how, like, and this is the place where I've sort of dug in that it's so hard to win. We might have talked about Blake Bortles at some point also. It's so hard to win in the NFL without an elite quarterback or a guy that's getting you great value. I concede that it is not impossible, but it's like betting on green in roulette also is a pot. You can win money doing that, but the odds are incredibly stacked against you. We're not to skip ahead 3 years on the Patrick Mahomes conversation, but like the Raiders are there with Derek Carr. They made their bed with Derek Carr, and right now, from a Chiefs perspective, I find myself kind of sitting back and snickering a little bit.
Yeah, that's looking better and better as things go along. We'll see how he does this year. He had an off year. Raiders fans insist, and including Ted Neogen, I never pronounced his name correctly. He's an analyst who works for The Athletic, mm-hmm. formerly Raiders Analysis, one of the best X's and O's guys in the business. I trust him, and he tells me that the offense was a disaster last year. And so I'm curious how Carr does. But, I mean, given the contract they gave him, once you pay a guy that kind of money, he better be at least very good.
Yeah.
Because otherwise you are torpedoed. That's it. You can afford to have a quarterback who's solid or decent or whatever phrase you want to say. Like, I think you and I talked about this. If you had Alex Smith for $6 or $7 million a year, or say even like $8 or $9 million a year, $10 million a year, that would be amazing. That would be, you know, okay, fair enough. I'll pay Alex Smith $10 to $12 million a year to be my quarterback.
Yeah, sure.
But the problem is you have to pay guys like that. You got to pay them $20 million a year, $22 million, or whatever it is. And so the Raiders thing, I'm going to give Derek Carr one more chance because I thought he could play. Then I watched him without elite pass protection, and he did not look good.
No, and yeah, and the post-injury world is a whole other thing. And honestly, I'm really interested in what John Gruden tries to do with him because that is interesting. By the way, I thought I heard you say Ted Nugent, the problematic country singer. You're right. The Raiders writer's last name is I don't even. I'm gonna guess. Also, there's no T at the end though. If you're looking for the writer that Seth just referenced, it's Ted Nguyen, maybe, but it's an N at the end, not a T.
I'm going to have to apologize to him after this segment because I've been working with him for a while. He actually wrote a great article about Mahomes. And what kind of offense Reed might try to function around him.
Yeah.
So, yeah, great analyst. And so we'll see how it goes. The Raiders don't really scare me at all right now. Gruden, I've never gotten the hype. So
yeah, it's strange now because like his first era of success, his head coaching success up till this point, I suppose. I feel like it's been largely kind of overstated because he's become a likable guy in the booth and that his quarterback camps are always really interesting. But even then, he won a Super Bowl, which a lot of coaches would kill for. Obviously, Andy Reid would kill for that. But which also he would have to kill someone to get fired this year. But like the John Gruden, the crowning of John Gruden as the upcoming $100 million savior of this franchise is still just bonkers to me.
Yeah, that's insane. And one thing I think is smart that Oakland did, they understand that with a salary cap, one area where you can buy an advantage is coaching staff, and training staff, and research and scouting.
Yeah.
So that's smart. That really is smart. If I'm amazed that some team, and I think Robert Kraft has been real careful not to let Belichick even come close to the end of a contract, because some team would be smart. If some team offered Bill Belichick, you know, 10 years, $100 million, I wouldn't even blink.
Oh, no, of course.
Because he's worth more than anyone in the NFL except maybe a couple of quarterbacks, and arguably more. And it's cheaper because there's no salary cap. And so, John Gruden, he became a nice guy. He won on a roster that he did not build, and they had an incredible defense, an unbelievable defense. The offense actually, someone did a really long thread on this when the Raiders were hiring Gruden. The offense actually took a step back under him.
That's interesting. I didn't know that. That's funny.
Yeah, statistically, the offense took a step back every year he was the coach. And so that defense was filled with incredible players. That was like Sapp in his prime. That was Simeon Rice when he was great. Rondé Barber when he was great. John Lynch when he was great. I mean, this defense was filled with all pros. And, you know, so they played their way into the Super Bowl, and then they ended up playing a team that was literally using John Gruden's playbook. So that was not –
$100 million.
Yeah, $100 million. We'll see how he does, though.
I just started Googling it, and these numbers could be a little bit old, but I'm seeing $7.5 million for Belichick. That is wildly underpaid. It's hard to make $7.5 million and to be significantly underpaid.
Right. But he makes them much, much, much more money than that.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, like, if he hit the open market, Dan Snyder would hurt himself trying to rush to the telephone to call the bank that he has out in Sweden somewhere withdraw $40 million annually and just wire it straight to Belichick's banks. Like,
Well, and that's one thing that's interesting about the contract with Gruden. We might start seeing a shift in coaching because more and more I think people are becoming aware that in the NFL, it's about your coach and your quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
If you've got a great quarterback, you don't necessarily need a great coach.
Yep.
If you got a great coach, you don't necessarily need a great quarterback, though it's very helpful. And so there's a place you can buy an advantage, and including that with staff as well, because there are some really great assistants out there. I'm amazed that no one has ever, decided, I'm going to offer Andy Reid $15 million a year to be an offensive coordinator.
Tell him,
no, you won't be the dude in charge. I just want you to be an OC, because I think Andy Reid would be an incredible offensive coordinator. Mm-hmm. I think he's a great head coach. I really do. But I picture him as the Wade Phillips of offensive coordinators, so much better than everyone else.
Right.
That it's really not a discussion. No one even asks, who's the best DC on Wade Phillips? Everyone knows that.
Right.
And why no one has done that? I think there are a lot of guys, you want to be the big man in charge, so mm-hmm. fair enough. But that would be, I've always dreamed, if I just had, unlimited resources, apparently.
Right, yep.
I would pay whatever it took to get Wade Phillips as my defensive coordinator, Andy Reid as my offensive coordinator, and Bill Belichick as my head coach. Mm-hmm. And I'd pay whatever it took to get there.
So I think what we're going to do today here is we're going to just intersperse the football and the nonsense together instead of starting with all of the good nonsense at the top end. Because we were discussing this briefly earlier, and you really roll right into this topic as far as looking for unlimited resources. Have you ever Googled how to sell one of your kidneys?
Josh, sometimes when we talk, I wonder what happens in the dark recesses of your mind in the quiet moments. And I become afraid. Speaking of becoming afraid, I almost tagged you in a video on Facebook of my daughter demolishing my one of my son's cup pyramids just because she could. She was walking by and she was doing something really cute, which I know this is becoming a bit. I'm trying to warn the world about this.
No, I'm taking this all very seriously.
She walks by and she sees he's got a cup pyramid. And she was kind of irritated about something. I don't remember what. And she just walks up and kicks it. not like a violent kick either. This is what made it frightening. It was just a little bloop right in the middle. The whole thing came crashing down. Then she sauntered away. And so when I talk about being afraid of the dark recesses of someone's mind, I know what I'm talking about because I experience it every day in my home.
Yeah, that's fair.
As I gaze into my daughter's giant, beautiful brown eyes, and I think one day I'm concerned. But anyway, no, I've never Googled that. That's a long road to a short thought. No, I've never Googled that. Why?
Oh, just because Beards and I have been talking about it, because that's where we're at in our particular lives, which is I don't need both kidneys, I don't think. I would love some. I don't need both kidneys as much as I need some spending money. And I've come across numbers ranging anywhere between $1,000 and $200,000. I would absolutely take the risks.
$200,000 is a conversation.
No, it's not, unless you think, I'll do it, is a conversation.
I'd have to get my wife's permission, but, $200,000, I'd consider it.
Well, hold on, listen, but two minds and bodies and spirits becoming one and everything. You have to get your wife's permission before you can do anything with your kidneys?
Well, yes. Well, that's the short answer, yes. Before I sell one of my organs, I'd probably run that by the old wife. There's your free marital advice today when you get ready to take that step. I'm going to run that idea by my wife. I also, just in case you're curious, if I thought about giving away one of our children, I'd probably ask her about that too.
That's so different!
It's different, but although, they're similar ballparks.
No, that's
on the way home, they were offering $5,000 apiece for my hand, so I just did it. These are important. I consult my wife before I do almost anything.
Seriously,
I will literally say to my wife, and this isn't all the time, this makes me sound worse than it really is, every now and then I'll be like, hey, I'm going to use the bathroom real quick. Is that okay?
I would have bet anything. That's what you're about to say. It's like,
that's the level of authority that my wife really does exercise over me at this point. Is if I went to the bathroom without asking her first, I might not be able to go. I'd be like, my body would be like, you don't have permission for this, dude. And
do you have a hall pass that she gives you? Do you have to check from room to room?
No, but that's a good idea. That would be a really good way to avoid these fights over what she did or didn't say. Be like, excuse me, I have my hall pass. I guess I showed you who the boss is.
Do you have,
that could be fun.
Do you have like a some sort of sensor where she can just track you throughout the house? Like, do you have a bell around your neck so she can hear you what room you're in, like a cat?
Not so far, but, you know, the older I get and the more weight I gain, the slower I move, so that's not really a problem for her. She usually knows where I am. I'm either at my desk working or I'm looking for food.
Yeah,
and
that's real.
And by looking for food, that means, like, I'm going, honey, you know, and so that works similarly to a bell.
What is the usual, like, is there a go-to, just like Kaiser family, honey, I'm hungry, like, response, other than, like, go get it yourself?
Oh, no, I have a wonderful wife. If I tell her I'm hungry, she'll get me some food.
Is there, like,
is
there a default, though? Like, do you have a secret love for grilled cheese that we all need to know about or something?
Oh, I have a love for Tombstone Pizza. And no, I'm not sponsored. I'm waiting for the call.
Yeah, no kidding.
I would be the greatest sponsor, or however you phrase it, whatever, yeah, of Tombstone Pizza that you could ever find, because I love Tombstone Pizza. I think it is delicious. I would pick it over, like, 99.9% of other pizzas out there, including restaurant pizzas.
Wow. That is, I mean, that you did just cut a promo. Like, that's, if they do hit you up, please just tell them to send us a couple pizzas so we don't have to sell our kidneys.
Oh, sure, absolutely. Well, sometimes I forget how young you guys are. Just remember, being broke is a part of life.
Or it's a part of death.
Well, it's also a part of death. That's true. But just remember that, you know, many, many years from now, when you're, you know, super old, like, you know, in your 30s, like me, you'll look back and you'll realize all the character you built not being able to afford food.
All of the character and the lost organs, the character gained,
yes,
the organs lost. Yeah, that sounds fun. Either from selling or from shutting down for lack of nutrients.
Yeah, you can't. But that's, you know, there's always, and I shudder to suggest it, you know, there's always the option of, you know, a second job, Joshua.
Well, listen, I'm trying to be committed, and I don't want to do anything brash.
You're not that desperate.
I'm not,
you're,
yeah. Listen,
you're willing to sell a kidney, but let's not get crazy here.
I am broke, not desperate. Listen.
That's fair.
You want me to go work? You want me to go back to Chick-fil-A? I would much rather give up a kidney. I would do that just to ensure I don't have to work at Chick-fil-A again.
You know, I can't imagine not wanting to work at Chick-fil-A. That frightens me about you. Now, maybe I'm wrong about Chick-fil-A. All I know is I've just eaten there is all.
Oh,
so my impression of Chick-fil-A is a very positive one.
Of course. My impression of eating at Chick-fil-A is a very positive one. Again, I would rather sell a kidney than work there again. By the way, having a kidney taken out sounds very painful. Not quite also as painful as having to reread and rewatch the Forward Progress play, which you wrote about on The Athletic.
Yes.
Seth,
yes.
First
back
question.
Back to football, yes.
First question, why did you do that?
I had so many people reply to the first video clip that I did.
I was so
just
mad.
Why? Just like they were irate. So I've been doing that anatomy of a play thing. You know, I suppose here's my plug for the football stuff.
Please.
You know, every Monday I write an anatomy of a play for The Athletic, and I kind of break down a play. What happened?
Yeah.
Well, it's all been offense, and like, so it's like, it's interesting because last week I went over the Montana Magic comeback at Mile High Stadium. One of the best memories for a lot of Chiefs fans that are, you know, older than you.
Mm-hmm.
And so I ask, every week I ask, hey, what are some plays you want to see broken down? And for like the fourth week in a row, a bunch of people wanted to see the Forward Progress play broken down. So I said, fair enough, and I really wasn't looking forward to it. But you know what I found in rewatching it like 100 times?
Mm-hmm.
It now no longer has power over me.
I'm not there yet.
I don't know, if you've had a chance to read it.
Mm-hmm.
If you go through it, and I address the call early on, I say, let's get this out of the way. That is one of the worst calls I've ever seen in sports. And that's, you know, the call that was made basically turned every quarterback fumble ever into a non-fumble.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this whole, well, it's Forward Progress stuff. Yes, because he was getting killed.
Right.
Like, I mean, this is obvious. But once you get past that, it's a pretty cool blitz that got dialed up.
Right. No, I was with you all the way until one. You said once you get past that, and then you lost me. It's legitimately. I had to relive it while reading this, and it's legitimately still like I really. I'm not. This isn't even from an emotional place. It's like the worst call I've ever seen.
Objectively, it's bad.
It's not even close to being forward progress. It's just a sack.
Yeah, he just tackled the guy and he fumbled. And that's the problem is, like, you can look at the rule book, and this is what I said. I'm sure, you know, you read it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I could talk about the rule book and what forward progress says and doesn't say. Mm-hmm. But literally anyone that has watched football for longer than about 6 months, not mm-hmm. even, mm-hmm. was, I mean, people were befuddled. Normally, you know, when something like that happens on Twitter, you see, like, the Chiefs fan reactions.
Sure.
And you see, like, national media. And usually, you know, there's kind of a divide a little bit. This was one where, like, literally everyone was just like, that's the worst call.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, yes, they end up losing by the amount they lost by. I get it. I really do, Josh.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm telling you, it was cathartic for me really looking at that blitz because a lot of people are pretty concerned about Bob Sutton, and I understand mm-hmm. that. Watching a nice little delayed blitz like that and some of the things that he put into place to help that play succeed, it makes you feel better. It makes you realize, you know, maybe there is some hope for the defense this next year. Because it is it's a pretty intricate little play. There's a lot of moving parts there that are used to ensure that DJ gets a free shot.
Yep.
And it works beautifully. And so once you get past the call, and again, I know that's where I lose.
Yeah, I just start hearing static. You sound like the teacher from Charlie Brown after you say that.
Oh, yeah, there's a whole lot of want
yes.
going on after that.
Really,
and I'm used to that. But that's seeing what a well-designed and executed play it was gives me some hope for the defense this year, and that, I found, was enough to help me let it go. It really was. I put in the article that I, like, stopped and took a walk and
yes.
looked at the sunset. I wasn't being funny there.
I believed it
100%. That's literally what I did. I watched the play and talked about it. I was like, okay. And I backed away from my head. I'm like, I'm going to take a walk. I watched the sunset for a while, got a little clarity. Okay. It's a big universe. In 10,000 years, no one's going to care.
Right.
All right. Perspective. And so then I sat down. So I decided to include that in the column because that is actually what I did.
It's what I'm gonna have to do before I go back to it. But these anatomy of a play things are best experience by being able to actually watch the play and not just hear me and Seth talk about it. So go to The Athletic and read that the breakdown there and the little bit of hope for Bob Sutton is a nice thing to take away from that play. But we're on kind of a time budget here, Seth, and we're about to run out of time. But I wanted to talk about Justin Houston. We talked about him a little bit last week, but your
yes.
piece on The Athletic came out between our conversations here.
Correct.
And I loved how you started it with somewhere along the line, we all stopped universally agreeing that Justin Houston is a great player. And
correct.
Before we talked it last week, and if you want to hear more of this, you can go back and listen to the podcast of this show from last week when we talked to Seth about how he was used in a way that was, you know, he was a Band-Aid instead of being a weapon. And
mm-hmm.
I think that is a completely fair, apt analogy. But is there something that gave you a little more specificity either in timeline or in conversation or whatever in why and how Justin Houston became a polarizing figure to discuss?
Well, I think it's pretty simple with regards to timeline. He had the huge sack season, which
mm-hmm.
is going to immediately set unrealistic expectations.
Mm-hmm.
Justin Houston will probably never have another 22 sack season again.
Mm-hmm.
And that's okay. You know why? Because there's a lot of people that will never, ever, ever, ever have a 22 sack season.
Yep.
There's a reason why that was such a big deal. And, I mean, you know, Von Miller's never had one. Khalil Mack's never had one. J.J. Watt's never had one. Aaron Donald's never had one. I mean, I could name player after player. They just didn't. I don't think Reggie White ever had one.
Mm.
And so it set expectations to a level that were never going to get met. A lot of things had to go right that year. So that's the first thing. The second thing was the mega contract.
Mm-hmm.
John Dorsey waited a year too long to sign Justin Houston.
Mm-hmm.
And now maybe Houston wasn't willing to play ball. We'll never know, right?
Right.
But that contract didn't get signed until they had to do the franchise tag thing. And that always means the longer you wait with great players, the more money you're going to pay. And we saw that with Houston. We saw that with Barry. So once he signed that deal, their expectations increased only higher. And there are some fans who automatically, when someone signs a big deal, they're not going to like that player as much.
Sure.
because they, you know, they should play for love of the game, whatever it is. And you see, here's the other thing that, John Dorsey did. He backloaded the contract. Mm-hmm. That contract really should only be about $16.5 million a year. Now, that's still a lot of money, right?
Sure.
But it's not $20, $21 million.
Yep.
And that's what we're currently paying out, because the first year was only $5 million and the second year was $13 million. And so that was the second thing. And then, worst thing that could have happened, he was on his way to having a really good year
mm-hmm.
in 2015. He was on pace for probably like 12, 13, 14 sacks, really playing well, as usual. Then he got hurt.
Yep.
Then he tried to come back in the playoffs, and he got hurt again. And the timing of it caused him to be hurt. And that, you know, out of sight, out of mind. And then when he came back and got put in kind of a rough situation with a much less talented defense, people were waiting to jump on him mm-hmm. because of the contract and being out of sight, out of mind with an injury. Does that make sense, that whole
Absolutely.
Timeline there?
Yes, 100%.
And so now what they missed, and this is what I wrote about, here's the big number that would be my takeaway. Now, I'm not talking about just coverage snaps. When you include snaps where Houston, seeing the ball, maybe was about to come back out or playing a numbers game and dropping into passing lanes or playing contain, a more passive role, right? Not rushing the passer. That was on a little over 30% of the pass rushing downs. 30%. That's a big number. A really, really, really big number. And that's going to affect your how often people see you get into the quarterback. It's going to affect your numbers. It's going to affect all kinds of things. I think if Houston had just two or three more sacks last season, I don't think we hear nearly as much from people.
Mm-hmm.
Even if he hits double digits, because, you know, people, we're weird with numbers, right?
Yep.
Double digits are a big deal. Even if he'd hit double digits, I don't think you'd have heard as much from people. But because he didn't quite hit double digits, and had he been allowed to rush the passer at the rate that he should have, in my opinion, having a more aggressive, active role on the in the pass rush, he would have easily hit those numbers, because his win-loss percentages, once you factor out all the neutral snaps, if you're following me here,
mm-hmm.
once you factor out all the neutral snaps that occurred because he was dropping into coverage mm-hmm. or playing contain or whatever passive role, his win percentage was what it's always been.
Yep.
He still wins at a really high rate, and he hardly ever loses. Like, his loss rate just keeps going down and down. His loss rate is absurdly low. That was also helped, to be fair, by the neutral snaps.
Mm-hmm.
So he really, I kind of expected him, because I do think in the middle of the year, I think he was a little dinged up or something, because he didn't use speed rush there for probably 3 or 4 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And he stuck with more power moves. But he really looked great on film. He is a player with literally no weaknesses. He's a machine. He is the best. His run defense, and I think I wrote this in the article, his run defense, he is better at run defense than I think any other defender is at anything else.
Mm-hmm.
He's a black hole.
Yes, unstoppable.
And he's still a great pass rusher, too. He just wasn't doing it as often.
Yep.
So that's the summary of it. That's actually one of my two or three favorite things I've written for The Athletic, because it's an opportunity to really shoot down some narratives that I think are very false.
All right, I need, for those of us attending the Church of Seth, or whatever it is that you preach from your athletic pulpit, we are just going to take as the inspired word of God, in a 15-second snippet, what is Justin Houston right now? Where does he belong in the pantheon of active NFL pass rushers? What is he now? What should we expect from him now?
Let's say, so if you took all interior and edge rushers, I would place him as, at the very least, a top 10 pass rusher.
Okay, that totally checks out. Yeah, that feels like a logical conclusion of all of your breakdowns and everything. Also, Michael Strahan, Jared Allen are the only two, Michael Strahan had 22.5, then Jared Allen, Mark Gastineau, and Justin Houston are the only three others to have 22 sacks in a single season.
Correct.
That
I
is
mean, it's just an
very
unrealistic
rare company.
Expectation to foist on someone.
For sure. J.J. Watt did have the two seasons over 3 years with 20.5, two out of three seasons. That's a pretty good stretch for him. But
absolutely. But it just goes to show how unusual that 2014 was.
Yes.
And in the great thing about this, if people really want to really examine what numbers mean, is you can just look at what happened to Von Miller last year.
Mm-hmm.
He had, I think, half a sack more than Houston. And that was with an extra game.
Right.
if that doesn't tell you, and I don't hear anyone, oh, yeah, Von Miller's really lost it.
Yep.
No, the defense wasn't as good.
Yeah.
And you know, they pay a price for that. Pass rusher is a lot like wide receiver in term when you think about sacks, because you're really reliant on some other things that are outside your control going right. You know, the quarterback, if he releases it in under 2 seconds, you're not going to get there anyway.
Right.
So you're relying on the secondary. And I made sure to include some video clips of Houston beating Lane Johnson, who, if you really want to see the difference between Houston and, like, an average pass rusher, mm-hmm. like Dee Ford, watch the Eagles game, because the Eagles, I mean, Johnson and Peters, you and I have talked about this before, they mm-hmm. really put it to Dee Ford. It was bad.
Bad. Bad.
Whereas Houston, he gave as good as he got, and he beat them more than a few times. But there was one snap where he just put Johnson on skates and was about to move inside to hit Wentz, but the ball came out in literally less than a second.
Speaking,
so things like that, that's why you have to watch the film.
Speaking of having to get out in less than a second, Beards is going to come in here and destroy me personally if we don't end this segment right now. Seth, thank you very much, as always, for the time, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Sounds great. I'll talk to you then.
Seth Kaiser of The Athletic. Follow him on Twitter, @RealMNChiefsFan. I'm sorry. We're out of time. We only have an hour today, and Beards is getting that look in his eye. He's getting that Von Miller look in his eye, that Justin Houston look in his eye, and you do not want to see Beards when he's angry.
This is Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe.
Good chicken is worth the money. I'm glad we could talk about this.
This is really, and it's all kind of analogous to good chicken is worth the money. So is good Chiefs writing.
On 1510 AM, 94.5 FM, and the ESPN Kansas City Facebook page.
Yeah, I know. That's the end of the hour music, also serving as the intro bump music. We took Seth. If you're mad that you didn't get more Seth Kaiser, we literally did not have the real estate to give away today. That was Maximum Kaiser, which is, I think, always a good thing.
Overmax.
Did we overmax?
A little bit.
Sorry. Whatever's next. We did our very best. Yeah, thank you again to Seth Kaiser for joining us on our regular day, not a regularly scheduled time, because we had a truncated hour of Almost Entirely Sports here today, but it's always a wonderful time getting to talk with Seth. Please go read all this stuff at The Athletic. It's worth your money. I don't just leave out information, so you have to go read it. He's writing these things, and that's how it's best consumed. He's also great at talking about it and making you want to go read it, so you just need to go do that. Thank you again to Seth. We will be back for a regular scheduled time tomorrow. Actually, we don't know that. We'll find out then. Bye, Mom.
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe on ESPN Kansas City.